From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Robbie Feinberg with the news on This Day in Maine, Wednesday, December 1st, 2021.
This Day in Maine is made possible by the Maine law firm of Eaton Peabody, serving generations of Maine families and businesses from offices in Augusta, Bangor, Brunswick, Ellsworth, and Portland. And by Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare, helping members stay healthy and happy with comprehensive coverage, smart digital health tools, and engaging well-being programs.
The Maine CDC is reporting 938 new cases of COVID-19 today. Three more Mainers have died from the disease. 334 people are hospitalized. That's another pandemic record for Maine. It's the third day in less than a week that hospitalizations have hit new highs. 99 people are in critical care and 49 are on ventilators. The director of the Maine CDC says the new COVID-19 variant Omicron is a concern, but it's still unclear what kind of threat it will pose. And until that's known, Dr. Nirav Shah says there are protective steps people should take. Patty White reports.
Shah says many people are wondering how well current vaccines will protect against the Omicron variant. He says getting the answer will take time, but
if you're vaccinated, your immune system is not a blank slate anymore. Just as the virus can adapt, so can your immune system.
So the best protection, Shah says, is to get vaccinated. For adults who already got the shot at least 6 months ago, get the booster. And he says now is a good time to wear masks indoors in public spaces. These recommendations are not just designed to keep the public safe from Omicron.
Omicron is a spark on the horizon. The Delta is the fire that's blazing here today.
The Delta variant is driving the current surge in cases and record-breaking hospitalizations, which continued Wednesday with 334 people hospitalized. The number of patients on ventilators also hit an all-time high of 49, as did Maine's positivity rate, now at 11.6%. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
The pandemic has altered where people want to live. A new survey from the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston finds that it's reversed migration patterns across most of the region. Erwin Gratz reports.
The Federal Reserve Bank looked at change of address forms filed with the U.S. Postal Service. In Maine, the forms show more than 4,500 households moving into the state, reversing a trend of out-migration in prior years. The forms also indicate most were filed as temporary changes of address. The analysis also showed greater out-migration from urban areas in 2020, and that helps explain why Massachusetts, home to New England's biggest urban area, was the only state in the region to see an increase in out-migration. Erwin Gratz, Maine Public Radio News.
Maine energy regulators are warning that spikes in electricity prices coming this winter could be exacerbated in future years by the rapid expansion of so-called community solar programs in Maine. The legislature recently increased the size of projects that could access the state's net energy billing system, which provides credits and payments for electricity that solar generators put on the grid. Patrick Scully, a member of the Public Utilities Commission, told a legislative committee today that the credits add cost to everyone's electricity bills.
These costs are going up, and the impact of these costs on Maine customers are particularly regressive in impacting lower-income customers.
He adds that the value of the credits rises when electricity prices rise, costing all ratepayers even more. He says it's a cycle that eventually could inhibit the push to decarbonize the economy.
It starts to create, at some level, a disincentive for people to engage in beneficial electrification. I own an F-150. I would love to trade it in for one of the new electric F-150s. But if my electric rates keep going up, I'm not sure I'm going to do it.
Regulators say that at minimum, the new solar programs will add $97 million annually to system costs, a number that could rise dramatically after 2022, depending in part on how many of the planned projects actually get built. Former U.S. Senate candidate Sarah Gideon is donating $3.5 million of unused campaign funds to create a program that will help low-income working parents complete higher education. The Build Hope Project will cover internet bills, unexpected car or home repairs, and expenses that might force a student to quit school before they graduate. The nonprofit Maine Equal Justice will manage the fund. Executive Director Robin Merrill.
Investing in parents is worth it. For Maine kids to grow up with greater support and opportunity, for filling gaps in our skilled workforce, for growing our economy, and really for Maine, for our state, to be the kind of place that stands by families and makes sure that everyone can succeed.
As Speaker of the House, Gideon sponsored a bill that created the Higher Opportunity Pathways to Employment, or HOPE, program at the Maine Department of Health and Human Services. As of September, 67 HOPE students had completed higher training programs. The legislature recently approved 300 additional slots in the program. And in the weather tonight, mostly cloudy across Maine, lows in the teens to low 30s north to south. Tomorrow, some precipitation, rain in the southern part of the state with a coating of light snow and rain in the northern mountains, highs in the mid-30s to mid-40s. Tuesday marked 1 year since Maine's Climate Council released a lengthy action plan for achieving ambitious climate goals. Since then, the state has made significant progress on some fronts, but still faces sizable hurdles on others. Kevin Miller reports on the anniversary of the report and several new initiatives that Governor Janet Mills says will help communities prepare for and adapt to the changing climate.
It felt like a typical early December day in Maine on Tuesday, as Mills and about a dozen others gathered in a chilly wind outside a University of Maine building in Orono. But headlines of record-setting heat waves and cold spells, destructive storms, and other unprecedented weather events over the past year have underscored that the climate is changing globally and locally.
Sea level rise is accelerating. Gulf of Maine is warming faster than 99% of the world's oceans, which probably everyone in the state now knows all about.
Ivan Fernandez is a faculty member at UMaine's Climate Change Institute and a member of the subcommittee that provides scientific and technical advice to the Maine Climate Council.
We experience increasing frequency and intensity of storm events and heat waves, drought, ticks, and Lyme disease as part of our daily lives and more. We live it every day. This is not something that we're talking about in the future.
Since the state released its Maine Won't Wait action plan last year, Maine has experienced both drought and destructive rainstorms and the second warmest summer on record. But Mills and Climate Council members say Maine has made significant positive progress towards those goals, which include obtaining 80% of electricity from renewable sources by 2030 and installing 100,000 new electric heat pumps by 2025. Mills noted that 28,000 heat pumps were installed between July 2020 and June of this year. Generation of solar energy systems has increased fourfold in Maine since 2019, and more than 5,000 electric or hybrid vehicles are now on Maine roads, a 90% increase in 2 years, but still a fraction of the more than 200,000 electric vehicles that the report says will be needed.
Maine is not waiting any longer. We're making unprecedented strides to embrace clean energy, to reduce carbon emissions, to strengthen our economy, and help our local communities fight at every level the greatest danger of our time. Code Red for Humanity.
That phrase, Code Red for Humanity, was the central theme of a report this year from scientists on the United Nations International Panel on Climate Change. That panel warned that countries must achieve much more aggressive emissions reductions to avoid worldwide climate catastrophe. Mills and state lawmakers set official goals of reducing Maine's carbon dioxide emissions, partly from cars, trucks, and SUVs, by 45% in the next decade. In a tiny but symbolic first step, Maine's first fully electric school bus began shuttling kids at Mount Desert Island this year. To mark the report's one-year anniversary, Mills also announced that her administration will provide nearly $25 million to municipal and tribal governments to start or enhance their own climate action plans, as well as to take on climate resiliency projects. As manager of the small Arista County town of Easton, Jim Gardner says climate change threatens the resiliency of the potato industry that is the backbone of his area's economy. And speaking during Tuesday's press conference in Orono, Gardner says collective action must be taken.
The issue of climate change is too large for any of us to tackle on our own. It requires strong partnership to build a resilient Maine.
The Climate Council's progress report will be reviewed by lawmakers during next year's legislative session. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
Later this month, Maine's new broadband agency will submit its plan to the federal government to use $128 million to expand and improve high-speed internet access across the state. Steve Missler has more.
The Maine Connectivity Authority is just 6 months old, but the quasi-governmental agency is already sitting on $21 million in funding from the American Rescue Plan that Democrats in Congress passed earlier this year, and it will soon submit its proposal to the U.S. Treasury Department to spend $128 million more. Board Chairman Tim Schneider told lawmakers on the legislature's Energy and Utilities Committee Wednesday that the agency is in the process of merging with the old Connect Maine Authority, a small department that spearheaded broadband expansion with a fraction of the cash that's available now.
We were doing a lot with a little bit of money, and our goal here now is to do a real lot with a lot of money.
But there are rules for how Maine can spend it. Schneider says the Treasury Department released guidelines in October for the $128 million, which focuses on areas where residents are either unserved by broadband or underserved, a designation currently defined as internet speeds falling below 100 megabits for download and 25 megabits for upload. The broadband agency has mapped areas of the state that fall below those standards, and they're extensive. Some are concentrated in rural towns, and others are in what's known as last-mile locations, where internet providers have deemed it unprofitable to extend service because there are too few customers. Some towns have sought to remedy this problem by creating their own networks, a move Schneider says is encouraged by the federal government's guidelines in applying for the newly available funds.
They explicitly call out public-private partnerships, and one of the great things about Maine is we have a lot of examples of these kind of public-private partnerships that sort of take the best capabilities from local governments and from private providers and put them together to provide service.
The public-private partnerships, also known as municipal broadband, are not always viewed favorably by existing providers. In November, the town of Hamden defeated a municipal broadband initiative after lobbying by Spectrum, a provider owned by the multi-billion-dollar telecommunications giant Charter Communications. A campaign by a conservative advocacy group bolstered Spectrum's lobbying efforts, but the two entities failed to scuttle a municipal broadband initiative in the town of Leeds last month. Such fights could proliferate in the coming months, as the broadband agency distributes millions in federal dollars. And more is on the way. The infrastructure bill that President Joe Biden signed into law 2 weeks ago will bring another $100 million to the state. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
As Central Maine Power's energy corridor continues to confront numerous legal and political challenges, there is movement on another major transmission line proposal. This week, state regulators called for bids to construct a transmission line that would connect northern Maine to the New England electricity grid and encourage the development of renewable energy sources. Supporters say CMP's recent experience shouldn't be seen as a death knell for other projects that will be needed to meet regional and national green energy goals. Fred Bever reports.
The new Northern Maine Power Line effort was mandated by the legislature this year, and it's generally not that different from CMP's New England Clean Energy Connect, which grew out of its bid for an energy contract mandated by Massachusetts lawmakers. Beset by controversy from the start, the CMP project was hammered at the polls a month ago by voters who approved a referendum that aims to kill it. Then last week, the state also suspended its environmental permit.
But now that that has happened, we need a way to get to our renewable energy goals.
Arista County Democrat Troy Jackson is president of the Maine Senate and a chief sponsor of the law that could bring the new project to life. He says Arista and parts of Washington County are disconnected from the New England grid, and electricity to or from the area must be routed through Canada. That's inhibited the success of local biomass energy plants, he says, and the development of wind energy projects that potentially could produce massive amounts of non-polluting electricity, a product that's in high demand as the region and nation move to decarbonize the economy.
And here is Arista County that's dying for economic development and has some of the greatest wind in the entire world. Biomass and things like that. We can't get that power out of Arista County viably. And here's an opportunity to get a line built, get some projects going in northern Maine, get some economic viability into the county.
The RFP issued by the Maine Public Utilities Commission on Monday is split into two parts, one calling for proposals for the transmission line itself and one to procure large slugs of renewable energy from wind or solar projects or from the development of a biomass generation plant.
This has been the holy grail of clean energy development in Maine for well over a decade. And this is the first opportunity to really try and make that a reality.
Jeremy Payne, executive director of the Maine Renewable Energy Association, says the energy producers in his sector have been anxious to get a foothold in northern Maine, and the proposed project could even lead some big wind turbine manufacturers to locate in the county, too. But he says bidders would do well to learn from CMP's experience that it's important to develop close connections early on with individuals and businesses in potential host communities to gauge their needs and court and maintain their support.
And that seemed to be sort of the rub that occurred with the CMP line was once they encountered resistance, they said, well, we're coming anyway. We've got this letter of support from 14 months ago from your town council. And then individuals in the town said, we don't care. We're going to flip that vote. We're going to have them undo that letter, and we're not just not going to support your project, we're going to actively oppose it.
Although there is no specific route chosen for an Aroostook transmission line yet, Senator Jackson and other backers say its footprint would be less intrusive than the CMP project in western Maine, requiring less cutting through woodlands and avoiding high-profile recreation areas like the Kennebec River Basin and the Appalachian Trail. Pete Dittesheim, the advocacy director for the Natural Resources Council of Maine, a leading foe of the CMP Corridor project, says a northern Maine line might be more like a big transmission upgrade in the state called the Maine Power Reliability Project, or MPRP. That was completed about 10 years ago by none other than CMP.
The connection between Aroostook County and the grid, we think, can be done in a way that co-locates and doesn't cut across significant forest lands. And I think it's much more likely to be the sort of discussion that occurred around the MPRP. That was 300 miles of transmission line that was built in Maine with some small issues here and there, but it got resolved.
Still, some observers say that losing bidders for the Northern Maine project might try to undermine it, just as competitors of CMP's partner Hydro-Québec did by spending big money to challenge the corridor project in the courts and at the ballot box. And one new wrinkle that developers and regulators will need to consider. Under the law voters passed last month, construction of all high-impact transmission lines longer than 50 miles will require approval by a majority of the legislature. And if they cross public lands, the bar rises to a vote of two-thirds in each chamber. CMP officials did not respond to requests for comment. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. And coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning, we'll take stock of Maine's action plan for tackling climate change 1 year in, what's been accomplished so far, and what steps are needed to reduce the impacts here in Maine. I'm Robbie Feinberg. Thanks for listening.